It is Friday, 6th of August. This is episode 57 of Digital Outbox. Welcome on to another episode. I'm Chris and I'm joined by Ian again.
Good evening.
How are we feeling tonight? Are we feeling sprightly?
Strangely sprightly given tiredness.
Yeah, because it is, again, after last week we didn't really learn that lesson. We are on late again. But I'm feeling a bit more perky.
And I'm feeling bizarrely perky. Probably just because I've worked really late for the last 3 nights in a row, and I've just helped somebody move house. But when I see what he was in before and what he's in now, I'm kind of like, I'm almost touched.
Well, you've done a bit of good tonight.
A good deed.
Let's see if we could do a bit more. Oh, that was bad. Sorry.
What, are we just going to finish now?
Yeah. We're definitely going to be finished in 40 minutes today, so let's crack on. So we have quite a lot of mobile type stories. Mobile phone, even though we say we never really talk about phones other than the iPhone,
we've got
lots of stuff. Phones and TV today, because firstly, Virgin have come out and they've announced that they've been doing very well in the TV market, basically. They've been attracting lots more subscribers, and their customers are taking part in all of their kind of products, so from broadband all the way through phone and TV.
I think what is most interesting, 43% of its broadband subscribers are now either 20 or 50 megabyte customers.
The lucky so-and-sos.
I read the article, I was just tempted to phone up O2 and say, I'll take the hit. I'll leave. I'll pay off my contract and I'll go back to Virgin, because although I'm only paying like a £10, the speed sometimes is, you just look at it and go, oh, 50 meg.
Virgin have moved their company on a long way. I mean, it used to be NTL, I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
Yes.
There was NTL
and there was Telewest, then they joined together and then they were rebranded as Virgin.
That's it. And in the NTL days, they were kind of their dark days, weren't they? Consistently bad customer service, basically.
There was bad customer service, but bizarrely in Glasgow, they were also very well known for I'm going to use the word hooky. I don't know if that means what it means to me, what it means to you, but basically dodgy knockoff boxes. So you know how you get Skybox and it's all encrypted and you can't really get a Sky card you can't really go and buy a hacker way of getting all the Sky content for free? You could on NTL.
There was a line across the middle of England, probably going just above Birmingham somewhere, and everyone north of that had dodgy boxes.
That honestly, dodgy boxes, and it gave them free Satanta, free Sky Sports.
Yeah, you hear about people going into the weirdest shops, the shops that you'd never imagine going and,
oh, they weren't weird. I could have taken you on a tour of Glasgow and easily pointed out where to go.
Brilliant. But their service now is pretty compelling with their TV and on demand, their box has improved tenfold, and I think they're coming out with a new TiVo driven.
Yes, which could be inspired. That is very interesting, because TiVo was, it was in the UK for a short period of time. I think it was actually Sky bought up the license for it being used in the UK originally, and then did nothing with it.
They probably just wanted to stop it using, because TiVo wasn't always as compelling as it is now. But Americans swear by it, don't they?
Americans swear by it, but they've been talking up their new TiVo front end, which I don't think has been as well received as maybe people were hoping. But TiVo by the end of the year, and also 100 meg broadband service.
Yeah, and so it's going to be blooming
that
interesting.
That price will be interesting. If they bump up the 50 meg people to 100, or if it's only like maybe a 5 or a 10 or more, that's...
Yep. Especially as we know from last week that they actually deliver their speed that they promise.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty amazing. I can't get them. You'd be surprised to hear I can't get them here.
Well, you'd be surprised to hear that I can get it.
You can, yes.
The haves and have-nots.
Hey, jinx, touch wood. Right, but whilst Virgin were announcing all their good results, Sky didn't want to lose out on the party, so they also announced some pretty amazing and impressive figures.
10 million subscribers.
10 million.
Which so see when you think, see when they first started and they looked at how much they were going to charge, and I remember laughing at it. And I'm paying them like £70 a month now. I'm paying Rupert Murdoch.
How have you managed to do that? isn't that more than their top package?
Yeah. On the top package, I've got HD plus I've got a multi-room.
Ah, okay.
So it's like top package and then add on £20.
You know what? I looked at moving to HD the other week because I figured why not. But then something stopped me. Just, you know, another £10 a month. Why would I want to do that really?
Mm.
But I don't know. One day it'll happen. I've got the new HD box, which is good. And I've got all the... They've whacked new ports on the back, so they've got an Ethernet cable now, slot socket. And so they're all gearing up for on-demand TV as well.
Yeah, the Ethernet's for their new Anytime service, which initially is only going to be available to Sky Broadband customers, and that's later in the year. But I mean, 30% of that 10 million now use Sky Plus HD.
Yeah, that's increased a lot. They reckon that it was the World Cup that obviously pushed people to do that.
Average revenue per person, £508.
Now that is pretty incredible. Again, let's think about the BBC TV license and how everyone moans at that. And then
£508. 10 million people are willingly handing over.
Yeah, that's an average of 508. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So they're doing very well. Anyway, they've had £1 billion profit all the in the year to June. So it's only halfway through.
And they've also added just shy of 120,000 broadband customers.
So, and this is the thing with all these things. That's £1 billion profit. So that's clearing all of their expenses, and they're moaning that they haven't got any money.
Yeah,
it bugs me. It bugs me a lot. You know, that's £1 billion more than it costs to run their entire system, and they're still moaning at BBC wanting to release apps onto the iPhone. Grr.
And a 3D channel launches for home users on October 1st. So if you do go out and splash out on a 3D TV, although when I was looking in the shops today, I still don't know why you would, just because the cost, it just seems an awful lot for very little return.
So that's quite interesting, actually. So you're obviously in the market with you've got an itch to buy a new TV. so how much extra does a 3D TV cost then?
For me, looking at it today, very quickly, £1,000.
What, in addition, or is that? That,
in addition,
wow! So is it?
They look to be coming in about sort of 1,500-1,600,
rather than sort of 500.
So one of the Sony ones I was looking at, I think, was 1,600, but then you had to pay for the glasses on top and a receiver and the little receiver. So I think you're almost £2,000. And if you're a family, you only ever get two glasses, so you're going to have to pay more as well. It's definitely early adopters and the early adopters tax. You are going to have to go for it.
We're in this limbo period now, aren't we, where we're yet to see if it's going to kick off. Because if it does kick off, then now's probably a bit early to sort of get technology.
I still think it's a fad. I really see the amount of people that keep on saying, oh, I went and seen, like, you know, Toy Story in 3D, and I thought it'd been really good because it's, you know, it's Pixar and it'll be this and that, and I'm disappointed. And I watched Avatar in 3D and it was all right. Didn't make me want to run home and buy a new telly and think, oh, I need a 3D TV.
I think the whole...
And view it from certain angles and wear another pair of glasses on.
Wasn't the whole point, though, that if you could put the technology in the TV for no extra money, then over time people just will have effectively convert. You know, it's a bit like high-def TVs now. Over time, as people recycle their old ones, they're going to become high-def.
When the first HD TVs came out, I mean, even the 32 inches were up at £1,500 and £2,000. Yeah, the decent ones.
You can buy one for 450, 500 quid now.
You can buy excellent ones now for, you know, 500-600 quid, and that's 40-inch TVs.
Yeah.
You know, and the picture's great. You know, you look at some of the reviews and they're nitpicking over the quality.
So, I mean, I see this as being something that 3D will just come along and over time it will just encroach.
I don't think to the same extent as HD. I really don't. I just don't see it. HD, as soon as I saw HD, I was sold.
Yeah, HD was a big selling point for sure.
Not convincing 3D. And that's even taking into things like, you know, PS3 and Wipeout and all that good stuff that games are coming out. Killzone 3 is going to be 3D next year. And
That's still something we've yet to sort of see. And as gamers, it could offer an interesting angle. Mm. More compelling than probably just standard films, I would say, for me anyway. So we've also had Amazon have released have announced a new Kindle.
Game on.
So this is a, it's just called the Kindle. It's smaller and it's lighter and thinner. It works faster. It's cheaper. So it's, if you want Wi-Fi only, it's 109 quid. If you want the version that's got 3G in it, so you can download books wherever
you
are.
That's free 3G.
Yeah, so it's the device costs you 40 quid more, so 149 quid, but you get free 3G downloads of all your books and buying stuff for the life of the product. And they've also opened the Kindle bookstore, so we can see the prices and things like that as it's a UK-based store rather than American.
Yeah, so just in the hardware, what did you think? I thought it looked really, really nice compared to that first Kindle that came out that looked like a Fisher-Price toy.
It's not, I mean, it's not radically different. It's still along, it's, you know, it's an evolution, but it does look nice. It's,
and the price is getting to throwaway price now.
Exactly. You would happily throw that device into a you know, your backpack or whatever and not think about it. It's 100 quid, and I know it's not peanuts, but it's definitely, I think it's got its market. I know we've talked before, and I've said I think I see that, you know, see its market. And you've said that you haven't.
but I think
you can see how I think the 109 price quid compared to 600 quid for
it. Yeah, but I think the price dropping to that level does make a difference. And I think if you're a serious book reader, and I'll be honest, I'm not. You know, I'll read the occasional ones now. And I must admit, the iPad's done that. I've got no appetite to go and pick up a paper book, but quite happy to sit and read a few chapters on the iPad now. I think if you're a serious book reader, £100 on a Kindle just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I think it is. And I think they're going to hit the price. See if they can get that under, I mean, I don't know if they'll do it. I don't know if it's going to be too close, but see if they could do it in the month of December, that the Wi-Fi only one was £99.
Absolutely. I think that, again, it's the psychological barrier. 99 quid, you know, for some people these days, in these ridiculous times, even though we're tightening our belts, you know, 99 quid's a stocking filler.
Well, when you see, when we were talking about it before the show started, this, the biggest Apple store in the world that opened in London, and the tweets I read today from, you know, I do follow a lot, obviously, Apple people on the tweets where people were visiting the store and, you know, just everybody buying iPads, everybody buying iPhones. And
yeah, these are big purchases.
I was in the Apple store in Glasgow last week, and it was mobbed. I mean, I came off the, usually the streets get more hustle bustle, and you go in the store, and you walked in the store, and it was just noise and people wanting to buy stuff.
Do you live in that store?
No.
You might as well.
I was there on a mission.
Yeah,
it wasn't for me. I even walked out without buying one of their magic trackpad nonsense things.
Did you actually try it?
No, because I kind of argued with the Apple guy a little bit in there. I got a bit hacked off with him.
Right.
He was a bit condescending. I might have called him a liar.
Well, it was all kicking off in the Scottish, in the Glasgow. Glasgow store.
They just hacked me off, and I was like, sod off. Where's your customer focus now, Mr. Blue T-shirt boy? Anyway.
He wasn't a whooping and hollering. So anyway, we've got the UK store for the Kindle books, and prices, so ranging, I'm just having a look now. So Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, £3.41.
So the UK store opened, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And the difference is now you can actually see it in pounds rather than dollars, because up to now you can buy books, but they're always in dollars.
That's right. Yep.
And the store size is just slightly less than America, but still 400,000 titles.
If it's I mean, I'm sure it's expanding, you know.
And the nice thing is now you're actually getting charts based on what UK people are buying.
Yep.
And not some trashy yank. Hi, any yank.
If Americans are listening to this, why? Well, I don't,
because why it makes sense. I couldn't believe. Amazon predicts they'll sell more ebooks than paperbacks by the end of 2011.
We've heard a number of these stats from them, haven't we? We did that dodgy stat last time, which was we're selling more Amazon Kindle books than we are hardbacks.
Hardbacks.
Yeah.
But the thing you don't know, because and I guess they can't put down actual hard and fast numbers, or they don't want to. It always feels a bit meaningless. But I think once they get by paperbacks, they then reckon it won't be very, you know, it'll be a short period of time afterwards that they can actually sell. Say they're selling more ebooks than they can the hardened paperbacks combined.
Well, they're in the Amazon are very much in the business of data. If they can get rid of idea of actually chucking books around and just chucking data around, then they're laughing because they're still charging, £12 for some of these just for a digital copy, which is a bit laughable.
The only thing I thought, they're talking about adding on some games and some other bits and pieces, and I just feel for them, see if they get it under, and I guess I don't know if it's the $100 price in America probably, but I think even here, if you get it under £100 this year and just say it's the best book reader, if you want to go and read a book, it's a Kindle. The same way that iPod turned into that music player, was the thing that people, if you want to listen to music on the go, even though we'd had other digital players, it just turned into iPod. It had to be the one.
I think their biggest problem at the moment is I don't think it's widely known. I think there are a lot of people out there that would actually quite like this device if they knew it existed. So maybe they'll do some TV advertising now that they've got UK focus on it.
I think that's where when we talk about Apple and why are they so successful, see the fact they have got 300 worldwide stores, see the fact you can go down 20-odd high streets in the UK and walk into a shop and buy the product.
But they are also the masters of hype, aren't they? And
masters of the universe.
Shows how it all works, because you never, you always know what's going on in the world of Apple.
Or so we think.
Well, that's exactly. So we know a bit of what's going on anyway. Okay, so we have had Google have been cleared or provisionally cleared of any wrong. Well, no, that's not true. Let me get that. They have been told, or they've been cleared of collecting people's data. The data they collected as part of their Wi-Fi slurping activities was meaningless, as far as you couldn't identify individual people. They've been told they have still done something wrong, but luckily the outcome of that has been that there's been no ongoing. How am I going to? I've lost the ability to talk. I apologise.
All I was going to say was next story, because I've nothing more that I could add, because you would probably double the length of time we're going to spend that story.
That story was a one-liner in our show notes.
It was a one-liner, which you had about I've managed 5 words actually... saying.
Remember, we've got to stretch this out to 40 minutes.
You want to do it again?
No. Let's leave it in there for the listeners to have heard the full glory of unediting.
Oh, comedy effect. That's taking my ending away.
Do you want to do this next one, seeing as you've put in such a good headline?
Oh, wave goodbye.
Very nice. Go on. So what's all this about then?
Amazingly, Google have dropped Wave. Everybody got very excited last year about Wave. It was hyped up. People were buying invites on eBay, and then when you used it, you thought, "What is it? What do I do?" And basically, Google have confirmed that I think what most people thought, that Wave has not seen user adoption that they would have liked, and certainly I've not seen anybody like really real world using it. So through the week, they came out and said that they don't plan to continue developing Wave as a standalone product. And I guess most key, we will maintain the site at least through the end of the year and extend the technology for use in other Google projects. So that's not a long time. That's 4 months away now.
Right. So I think it has been an interesting technological exercise. And I think it has, that's where its big benefit has lied. These technologies will filter themselves through into other Google projects, and I think that's why this was important. I know that.
But do you not think it would have been better just keeping that technology in the lab, so to speak? And then so we've seen Google Docs getting the kind of same real world editing that Google Wave first have.
Yeah,
would it not? Have
I don't know.
Just to
I
keep
think
Wave in the lab. And
no, because you never know.
No, but they could have kept it in the lab and say, "We've got a product that technologically was impressive, but we've not got a use case for it."
No, Twitter. Twitter didn't have really a use case. And and their whole philosophy is release it and see what happens. I mean, that's, they open source it, release it, and see what happens.
And fair enough, but I think it also comes back to that Google is very unfocused. They do have they are starting to have a, almost like a scattergun, shotgun effect. Just throw lots of things out there and see what sticks.
And it is, it's obviously a different philosophy. You know, there's different angles you can take. You can be Microsoft and seemingly not do anything now.
Well, Microsoft just seem to be now...
They're making money somehow.
Microsoft now look like an IBM, you know, like a kind of old company that you know, they've got to go through all this kind of, you know, crud to get a product out. And they just look to be copying. Apple look to be very focused on very certain things.
Yep.
And like, even though people want them to do more, like, you know, why wasn't a camera on the iPad? It's like, because that's the next year's model.
Yeah, Apple are definitely the snipers, aren't they? And Google are the machine gunners.
Google just are like, you know, like, just throw it out there. Just chase.
Both have their place on the battlefield. Shall we stop that analogy now?
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so we've lost Wave. But we have gained the ability to jailbreak an iPhone in a super easy and stupidly easy way. So America came out and said, yep, people have the right to jailbreak their own devices.
Yep.
And a week later, we now have a website which you can log on to. Well, not even log on to, go to.
Jailbreakme.com.
Swipe once and you are jailbroken.
Yes.
How, you know, that's pretty clever stuff.
Yep.
Have you done it?
No.
No, nor have I. But anyway, so if you want to jailbreak your phone, that is where you do it. So,
and maybe you should do it just now.
I'm not going to risk mine. one interesting thing came out. There's got a product called, I can't even remember this. You can turn your iPhone into a sort of a Wi-Fi hotspot, which I didn't know it was possible. So that's something I can see you deep in concentration.
I'm
swiping his phone.
Well, I'm just going to go to the website.
Okay.
What could possibly go wrong?
you could brick your phone.
There's the website.
He's on it. This is bear with us.
yeah, it's not doing anything. It's got a lovely background.
Nice.
I'll just put that down. I did swipe. Then the screen, the text just disappeared. And now it's just
maybe
sitting
it's doing
staring
something
at
in the background. You can keep us up to date with what your iPhone is actually doing.
Yeah.
So I
might have foolishly just bricked my phone.
So the next, our next story is something that Ian, you rightly predicted earlier, well, month or so ago, that you said Android this year was going to overtake iPhone in sales, and I said I thought it would happen next year, but it has already happened effectively.
Yep. So they're, I mean, and it's the figures are crazy. Margin of 27% to 23% US market. So more people bought Android phones in the first 6 months, and they're now actually selling 200,000 a day, which is just, it's just crazy. I mean, and it is crazy figures, but. And this is the only reason why I said it's always going to happen. There's now 20 on sale in America right now. 21 phones from four providers against obviously the one iPhone and one provider.
Yeah, and a provider that can't churn out enough. Basically,
they can't churn out enough. And I do think they lost. I mean, obviously the first 6 months doesn't really include the iPhone 4 sales. And I do think they lost a lot from, you know, once the iPhone had been stolen. You know, they obviously lost a lot from
once you know everyone knew that a new one was on the way. You know, you're always going to lose sales then, which is why Apple keep it so quiet, basically, isn't it? But yeah, so there was an interesting graph on one of the links that we've got in the show notes, which shows the kind of relative sales of devices, and everything is on a sort of general downward trend, apart from Google, which line shoots up. It's an amazing acceleration of sales. RIM just generally are on a downward slope. Apple have their peaks, and I think, you know, the graph for the next half of this year will obviously show Apple peaking again. But anyway, so Google seems to be the way of the market at the moment.
So an update on my jailbreak is that Safari is broke, but it's definitely not jailbroken.
Right.
So we'll switch off and see if it switches back on. I think I might be doing another story.
We'll probably
tomorrow.
Hear a story tomorrow about how this is all a scam and Apple now know who you are. You don't deserve an iPhone.
Oh, thanks.
That's okay. We have, so saying RIM are on a general down, a gentle downward slope at the moment, but they have come up with a new product, a product which everyone was kind of hoping was going to move them back in the right direction, called the BlackBerry Torch.
And I guess the reviews are out and it all just seems not very good. So the, I mean, the Engadget review, and I'll just sum it up here. The Torch seems sluggish, underpowered, dated from a hardware design standpoint, and BlackBerry 6, despite its new features and polish, still feels woefully behind the curve. To call the Torch the best BlackBerry ever would be an understatement, but unfortunately for them and the faithful, their best isn't nearly good enough.
Right, so now I have to say I didn't read through that whole review, because like we said that the Windows 7 preview that I logged through the other day was probably the longest ever preview. This seemed like the longest ever review of a piece of hardware. It went on forever. One thing I don't know whether it covered, but RIM and BlackBerry in general have a very defined type of user. Maybe slightly older, business-based user. Now, I don't think a user like that particularly likes massive change. I think they like to know how to use their phone. They've learned their phone, and they don't want to have to learn it again. They're not the techno-geeks that we are, who like that kind of messing around. I don't know. So is that one of the reasons why they haven't, you know, completely reinvented the wheel, and they've just made what they had already just a bit better?
I just don't know. I mean, they've got the corporate market sewing up, but I don't know many people that actually go and buy a BlackBerry now for their own, you know, personal device.
Most people I know who have had a BlackBerry have now sort of are moving on from them.
Yeah.
But if you've got the corporate market sewn up, and that's what they're aiming at then, isn't it?
Yeah.
And maybe this device is perfect for that market.
Maybe. So I don't know. I mean, they were talking about and I guess RIM have to big it up, because they're obviously trying to protect market share, and they are still the biggest. I mean, everybody's saying too little, too late, but they still have got the biggest market share right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess it's a bit like when people slag off Microsoft. You need to remember they've got 94% of the desktop market. You know, for a company that continually gets you know, slapped.
Well, and they're not doing anything at the moment. They're not particularly sparking any interest yet. They're still posting gigantic profits.
But I just wondered, with the way things are obviously changing so quickly for Android, I've written down here, Android to me just sounds like it's going to be the Windows of the phone world. It's going to be the popular choice. It's going to be in every platform the same way as, in every hardware device, same way as Windows. Windows can be found on all the different hardware devices right now in the PC world.
Yeah,
and I think you're going to see iPhone won't be as niche as Mac is in a desktop point of view, but I think it will end up being a smaller player. And I think BlackBerry Windows phones will be corporate, you know, almost like the Sun IBM equivalent of desktops.
Yep, I agree.
It's just the way it's going to go. iPhone will never. I can't see. I'll be amazed if they came out in 3 months' time and said it's now, you know, selling more than Android. I just can't see that momentum going from Android at all.
Unfortunately, we won't find out for another 3 months, will we? Say?
No. And I just thought I'd give you an update on the jailbreaking.
Yes.
And I had to switch the phone off and on. It did come back on. Safari then did work, and it said, looks like it failed last time. Why don't you try again? I did.
Oh, you did?
I now have a jailbroken phone. Stadia has been added to the home screen. Have fun.
There you go.
So,
what are you going to do now?
If I go to my home screen, I do have, I'm showing you as well as if the listeners can see, I do have a Cydia icon. Can you see that?
I can just about see something going on there. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. So you can now turn your phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah. So, there's Cydia. I can pick. I'm a user, graphical only. I'm a hacker plus command line or developer. No filters. Let's play with that later on when I can figure out what I'm actually supposed to do.
I think this isn't going to make a good podcast. it's already been pretty poor. Let's not make it worse.
See, if there's a video podcast, the sheer delight in my eyes that I've now just jailbroken my phone.
One day, listeners, we will do a video podcast and you can share the full horror of what I'm seeing. okay, and what the kind of final thing that you've put in here, this an amazing stat.
it is that I still can't quite get my head around it. So this is Eric Schmidt. I love that name. It just makes me giggle every time. Every 2 days, we now create as much information as we did from the dawn of civilization up until 2003. So every 2 days, we are creating 5 exabytes of data.
I don't even know how much an exabyte is.
No, well, it's the amount of data we created from the dawn of time to 2003.
It sounds like a Google.
It's just the fact that is what we're then expecting companies to fully index, make available, make searchable. We all want to see it and share it.
Not only expect to, they actually kind of just about manage it.
And for free.
You know what I've been thinking recently? I mean, they're saying that's how much information, you know, gets churned out. The problem is when you have that much information, it pretty much just turns itself, you know, back into the equivalent of data again. You know, data is unfiltered stuff that needs to go through a filter in order to get information out of it. But unfortunately, we've got so much information coming out of that initial data that we need another layer on top of it. I don't know what we'd call that layer of information, but I guess that's the challenge for search engines now is not how to turn data into information, but it's how to turn that quantity of information into the next level above that, the stuff that, you know, that we actually end up needing.
Mm. Well, and almost kind of related to that, Schmidt then noted that while technology is neutral, which was an interesting word, he doesn't believe people are ready for what's coming. I spend most of my time assuming the world is not ready for the technological revolution that will happen to them soon.
Yeah, and I think we've been seeing that in, you know, in things like how uncomfortable we feel with, things like Facebook and information that gets out there and how not in control of it we all end up being. And how it can be used for and against us.
It's almost getting to the point that unless you're willing to share all your content online, you can't enjoy fully almost like the tool set that these guys now provide. You know, if 90% of your friends are doing it and you're not because you're not willing, then you almost are left out now.
Well, it's the all or nothingness of it, and it's also almost the finality of it. Once you make that decision to you know, go even partially online, that's it. Then the information never disappears. I mean, when the internet first started, you know, I've had websites since the internet was pretty early on, and I'm pretty sure that they don't exist anymore. But if you create anything online now, you can be pretty sure that it's never going to go away. Your history that you post into Facebook, you can be sure that the pictures and the stories that are there are never going to go away. They're always going to follow you.
Also, how many accounts did you initially create, and did you put your phone your real name in? You know, and I don't know if that's changed now, whether you do use your real name or you always used to. I mean, I never used to.
I put in the minimum amount of information on anything that I ever do online.
Yeah, do you?
And but do that, you that your, does cripple it sometimes.
Do you put in your proper date of birth?
If I don't have to put a date of birth in, then I don't. Otherwise, I probably do. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's. I know some people just straight away. It's like no, I always put in something different because you don't need to know. A lot of it's just down to we're just either gathering information or we're asking a default question, maybe to prove your identity later on because we'll ask you for a date of birth. But you know, it is one of these kind of key bits of information that almost every site you sign up to asks for a date of birth.
It has to be said, there's definitely sites, throwaway sites, where you need to sign up to download something or something. I will definitely put in junk information because, why are they asking me to this information just so I can download
something? And I must admit, I do that now and I didn't in the past.
Yeah, so there, and again, I think in the past, you probably find that lots of those databases have gone now. But nowadays, that information is permanent.
Well, look at Newsbin. You know, so what did you have there, and what got hacked and is now run by somebody that
effectively from a legitimate site where you put your information in and had to put your payment details and all that kind of stuff in, and then got taken over by someone that I wouldn't trust, anywhere or with anything. Interesting times. I'm not sure exactly what the outcome is going to be. Anyway, that's the end of our news stories for today. let's go on and have a look at some picks. I will do my pick first. And it was actually a pick that was recommended to me by Ian. I was looking for a news host. I up until recently, I'd been on a monthly package of a news host. But Newsbins is one of those funny things which you use once in every blue moon. And I was ending up paying, $15 a month for something I just wasn't using. So Ian recommended me to something called AstroWeb, which is a pay-as-you-go news host. And it is a bargain. So it's $25 and you get 180 gigabytes of transfer for that, which doesn't expire. So you can use it whenever you like for over as long a period as you like or a short period as you like. So it's a bargain. So if you want to go to there, it's astraweb.com, A-S-T-R-A-W-E-B.com. They do monthly subscriptions, so I'm not sure why you'd want to do that. They also have the standard good stuff of, you know, lots of retention and lots of completion and free SSL to keep all your transfers private. That is my pick.
Very Ian. Good. My pick, and it's actually linked to that.
How do you say that?
What was that?
How do you say that? So I just looked in the show notes.
I don't know how to say this. So SABNZBD plus. Can't forget
SABNZBD.
The plus. It's an open source binary newsreader. So you can get many newsreader products. And I don't know what the current go-to newsreader product on Windows is. So I don't know what you use in a day-to-day or kind of every wherever you want to actually go and grab something. I don't know what you tend to.
You know what? I mean, there's lots around, but there's I wouldn't say there's a standard one. There's Newsbin obviously still around, and that's certainly good for NZBs and stuff like that. I can't even remember the one I downloaded, but it was pretty good. I just can't remember what it's called. Sorry, I'll find that next week.
And I guess the one on the Mac that I used to use lots was Unison. Which is very good.
I think we've covered that before, haven't we?
Yeah, but SABNZBD Plus is an open source binary newsreader and it's written in Python. You can download it for Windows, Mac, Ubuntu, and there's more downloads on the website as well. And once you've set it up, you actually access it via it's a web. It's almost like a running on a server, web server on your box.
Okay.
And it's actually very, very powerful. Surprisingly powerful, because at first I was a bit put off thinking it won't do, you know, what I'm really wanting it to do. You know, there'll be things missing, or it won't be as full features as a GUI client. But it's excellent. You've got a number of configuration options you need to go through. So you set it up to your server. So in my case, I set it up to use AstroWeb. It also integrates well with Newsbin or one of the other NZB sites is NZB Matrix. And what you can do is you can search from within the tool itself, or if you bookmark on either NZB Matrix or in Newsbin, you can set SABNZBD to automatically poll every 15 minutes or a time of your choosing. And if it sees something there bookmarked, it grabs it and downloads it.
There you go.
So you can easily, you know, remotely then control, you know, what your box at home is downloading. It's also got some very powerful rules for actually filtering the content. So once it's downloaded it, you can then it unpacks it. So it'll use PAR files to repair. It'll unrar, and then you can say, well, I want to rename it in this certain format, and then I want to move it onto a folder of my choosing. So in some
it's
ways,
almost like it's perfect for moving movies into a.
So, and I'll give you an example of two things I've done over the last week. Downloaded a couple of movies. It's grabbed them, it's downloaded them, did all that moving and shuffling over, renamed them properly, and then I've set it up to once it's done, I get an email back, so I've got a bit of confirmation coming back that's actually now complete, which is ideal.
Yeah, and those movies were obviously copyright free and of
no. The and another thing I did was True Blood season 3 is now shown in America, and I kind of missed the start of it, so there's 6 or 7 episodes.
I haven't even seen True Blood season 2 yet.
Yeah, well worth catching. So I grabbed them, and again they downloaded them, they put them in the right format, they moved them in the right place, and then I fired up Plex and the Mini, and it indexes straight away, and it's all there. It's almost like a PVR. It's almost
you really
almost
have got your whole digital life sorted, haven't you?
It just well, it feels like perfect. You know how when you've got your Sky Plus and you say you know, record this whole series, and then you can almost forget about it and pick it up in 5 weeks' time. It's all there. This feels the same way.
So in effect, you could be sat at work. Obviously, you wouldn't do this at work. You could bookmark something that you saw that you wanted, knowing yep. that when you get home, it'll be ready for you to watch.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Even better. There's actually a couple of iPhone and iPad apps that allow you to remotely, they allow you to connect if you're sitting, obviously, in the Wi-Fi network locally, but you can also do it remotely. So if you set your router up properly, so I can connect in and fire up the app in my iPad, for example. I can see the current downloads. I can query Newsbin and NZB Matrix directly from the app, and I can queue up from the app. So it just makes it very, very easy to actually, you know, download content when you want it.
Very good.
Very impressed. It's free. There's also lots of add-ons. So it'll go and grab extra data for IMDb, for example, to attach onto the movie itself. But go to their website, which is sabnzbd.org. I just wish it was a better name.
Yeah, that's not going to be easy to tell people, is it?
No.
I'm going to have forgotten it.
Show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all there. It also auto-updates itself, so when you start it up, it'll say, oh, there's a new update. Do you want me to go and get it? Very, very impressed with the actual software and the configuration options. It's excellent. And it is now the tool I would install now for doing...
Almost sounds like we would need another little rundown to where you've told everyone how you've set up your Mac Mini.
And I have kind of got the bare bones of the post. This was the last post that I was going to do. And it was going to be actually getting content. And there's a news group side, and there's also setting up the torrent side, because you can set a lot of that up automatically as well. And I think on this is you can also point it to something like a shared drive. So if you're using something like Dropbox, you can point it to your Dropbox drive. So if you, for anywhere in the world, you put in an NZB file into your Dropbox account, it will see it and start downloading it. So very, very slick piece of software.
Perfect. Okay, that's us for this week. Not quite within 40 minutes, but near enough.
Just one more thing.
Oh, crikey, you're going to...
I'm on the Cydia store. So for $10, I can buy a Wi-Fi sync. So no more having to tether up to a cable. Thanks for that, Apple. SNES for iPhone. So I can have a SNES emulator. $6. I can see me buying apps tonight.
If you want to upgrade your operating system, you have to unjailbreak it again, though, don't you? So it's
it does come
with its drawbacks.
I'm just going through some of the different apps.
And you know this feeling you're having now. I'm pretty sure that's the kind of feeling you have on Google, isn't it? Because it's that freedom again to do these things.
I can do FaceTime over 3G.
Yeah. So it's again. This is the difference in philosophy. You know, iPhone has massive advantages, but one thing you have to go along with what they want you to go along with. I'll be interested to see whether you keep it unlocked for this week and see what you get up to. If you want to find out more information, we are on www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us on info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. And as we do every week, we would love to have your reviews. We'd love you to click the stars and give us lots of stars, but also we'd like some text reviews. They help our podcast and they help us get our podcast out there. If you want to find out more about me, you can follow me on Twitter as CheesyUK. And Ian, where can we find you at the moment?
Blog is iand.net and Twitter is Shweepa.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye. Slick
my ass. It was
I can't believe I joke about my phone.
I know, all in 2 seconds. My middle story there, whichever one that was, the most guff I've ever heard.
Sorry, oh no, I've heard you saying worse. Don't worry.
Thank you very much. I'm going to interesting to listen back and just see if I actually did say the story.
You didn't.
I don't think I did. Anyway.